Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Path of Self-Sovereignty podcast. Today, we are with Ronnie Landis. Ronnie is a holistic well-being advocate. He's an author, speaker, and lifestyle design specialist. His personal mission is to uplift others by spreading a health message based on self-sovereignty and personal development. Ronnie, could you give us a bit of your history or background, where you've been, where you come from?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show. And yeah, so I'll try to keep it short and sweet. So when I'm usually asked that question, I kind of take it back to the very beginning. So when I was about 4 years old, I was literally enrolled into martial arts. I feel like that was really what I was born and bred for at a particular point in my life. The first part of my life, my childhood, my adolescence, my young adulthood, was pretty much focused on being an elite athlete, both in basketball and in martial arts. I had been extremely focused and dedicated to my martial arts practice in my career, which I was a competitive athlete in Taekwondo as a third degree black belt. I ran a martial arts school of over 500 students at a very young age. And that's really the background I come from. So, you know, studying people like Bruce Lee and the philosophy of Eastern philosophy and spirituality and things of that nature were very familiar to me growing up. And I really enjoyed the philosophy and really the mentorship that came from martial arts. That is still a huge part of the puzzle to who I am. And long story short, I got into the holistic health field because I had a number of knee injuries starting when I was 17. It was just wear and tear, you know, overtraining, not necessarily, you know, when you're young, you don't have the wisdom of age, right? Yeah. So I had all this ambition, I had all this energy, and I had the training in martial arts and athletics where I could perform at a high level. But I didn't at the time understand more of the nuances around recovery, for example. You know, recovering the body does have its limits. And eventually, if you push too hard on the body, it will push back. And so I experienced that when I was about 17, 18. I had my first knee surgery on my right knee. And that really started a major shift in my transformation from being so body-centric to actually having to adopt more of the personal development, the mindset work, because I couldn't get through that injury just by the tools I had, which was just discipline, push. Yeah. I couldn't work through it at the time. So I had to go deeper into my meditation. I had to go deeper into just me as a human being and looking at my options moving forward. Ultimately, my passion and my commitment to be an Olympic athlete was so strong that I was able to move through those challenges. I was able to recover for the most part. And then when I was about 22 and back on the competitive circuit, I had another knee injury on my left knee. I tore part of my cartilage in my ACL. Luckily, by that time, I had enough wisdom and enough experience. I knew how to rehab it. I knew how to recover. I worked with rehabilitation specialists, a really good surgeon and things of that nature. But at that time, something started to shift and I realized that nutrition and health was more than just sports performance, right? Like my life was going to have to be more than just, and this is when I became a teacher too. You know, I went from being like an individual athlete with my own sole focus on that. And then I became a mentor and a teacher for, you know, all the way from ages 3 to 60. And so I kind of started to evolve in that way. And that's when I realized that I needed to really just mature in terms of what I put in my mouth. So I started exploring, you know, different dietary ideas. I got into organic food, believe it or not, you know, just like most people, especially in the States, I'm sure around the world as well. I was eating a processed food diet and I was getting by due to genetics or you know, whatever, just being young and having my hormones topped off. But as that started to balance out through the aging process, I started to realize that food was far more important than I thought it was. And make a long story short, I eventually got into vegetarianism, veganism, raw foodism, cleansing, detoxification. I got deep into the science of nutrition, and I became a nutritionist. And, you know, a number of things happened in my personal life that caused me to make a fork in the road and go away from my professional athletic career to becoming more of a public speaker and becoming a voice for the message of health and nutrition. And at that time, it was really centered around the raw food lifestyle. I was mentored by people like David Wolf in the early days of the raw food, kind of where it was at its peak. I would say 2009, 2010 was when that movement was really at its peak, and YouTube was just coming on, and you had all these kind of like influencers and people around the world. And I know all those people. I know all them from the community and from YouTube and personal relationships. And that was an amazing time in my life, I have to say. About a decade ago, and that's how it started for me. I really got exposed to a completely new lifestyle that shifted my consciousness. 30 days of green vegetable juice and raw foods and running an experiment on myself. I healed my knee injuries in 30 days, completely healed my knees. Like it was an amazing, amazing epiphany. And it also did something to my consciousness. It lifted some kind of adolescent self-centered veil, not centered in a bad way, but just, you know, when we're young and we're ambitious, oftentimes all we can think about is what we want. And all of a sudden I realized that most people are in pain. Most people are in some kind of pain, definitely physical pain, inflammation, gut issues, all manner of things. I didn't realize it at the time. I thought what was normal, right? You go to the doctor, you get your pills or whatever. I never bought into that, but that was just the world I was around. So I never really questioned it either. I didn't care enough to question it. But eventually when I healed my knees and my consciousness lifted, I began to see what was happening around me. I realized that there was corrupt, you know, I got into the conspiratorial research back then as well. That kind of goes with it too.
Yes, like it does. Yeah,
there is
yeah.
something about the raw food thing in particular, not veganism, because that's a whole other thing. We can talk about that later. I've made a huge transition in that particular department, which I've now started to speak a little bit more about. But the raw food and cleansing particular aspect kind of goes hand in hand with the conspiratorial thing, because what ends up happening is as you make these adjustments in your diet and you do actually liberate us, your life force in a way, and this consciousness upgrade happens, you start to realize that everything that we were told about our standard American diet and the food pyramid and the processed food diet and the pharmaceutical cartels and all that, you start to realize that, oh man, this is actually, not only is this completely atrocious, this has nothing to do with health, but it's also not by accident. It's like, I realized that this couldn't be by accident that this was all happening. And that was a huge moment of awakening and clarity in terms of, okay, what am I going to do with my life now, right? That fire for being a professional athlete isn't as strong as it was. And I need to figure out what direction am I going to take and how am I going to be of service? And so I just thrusted myself fully into the field of nutrition and health. And then I decided to become a public speaker, and I would just speak at potlucks and these meetup events, and I started writing books and just really immersed myself fully into that archetype and that field. And that's a little bit of how my story started. That was about a decade ago, and from then to now, I mean, it has been an absolute journey. It's been an absolute ride, many, many ups and downs. It's been a spiritual journey. It's been an intellectual development journey. It's been a journey of the human condition, to say the least. And my focus has been kind of this intersection between psychology and the physical body and how we feed our body, how we take care of our body, the science of longevity, again, the science of cleansing, detoxification, but also the science of rebuilding and restoring the body once you've cleaned it all the crap out, right? Once you've cleaned out the junk, how do you rebuild the body and restore it to something that I think is more representative of what our human potential is? So all in all, I think the best way that I've been able to explain who I am and what I do is I'm a high performance health specialist. I'm a human potential specialist that has a focus on holistic health and nutrition, and using that as a way to help people really increase their potential, right? Because at the end of the day, I knew, even though you get into these diet camps and people kind of get a little obsessive and focused on the diet itself, for me, I always knew that this was a path, right? This was part of a path, but this wasn't the end all be all to get stuck on some diet or something like that, right? Which you see a lot on the internet. Yeah. And I'm trying to give a voice to expand that a little bit for people, especially the younger, more impressionable millennial generation that may not have had the rooting that I had when I saw Bruce Lee at 4 years old. Like, Bruce Lee to me was, I didn't have a father. He was my male figure when I was a young child. So I was fortunate in my situation to get these icons and these messages and these kind of imprints of, you know, what I felt like a real man was, or what I felt like a father figure was, or to this idea of discipline and responsibility and purpose and really this idea that I can change myself and I can build myself and I can create myself at any turn in the journey, and who I've been doesn't have to be who I am. And I feel like that's something I'm always trying to get across to people, especially the younger generation that may or may not have had a particular, you know, for example, I remember when phones weren't, I didn't have a phone, right? I was part of that last generation that, I didn't grow up with the whole digital interface of the internet and social media. So, you know, there's a lot that can be unpacked there, but that's just a little bit about my journey, my thought process, and where I've been.
That's cool, man. One of the things that just stood out for me was when you said that you're talking about the psychology and the body. And I think one of the fundamental flaws that we see all over the world, in my opinion, is that they're not intrinsically linked when they're trying to, like you mentioned, diets. The reason diets don't work is because you're not sorting out the psyche that's right. Sitting behind the diet, right?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I always say that 90% of diet is psychological. You know, you're dealing with your own issues when you go into a new lifestyle and you change your food approach. You have all these habits. There's all these associations. There's emotional associations. There's psychological connections and neuropathways that have been formed through the habits that we have rehearsed. Right. So all of our patterns, our food habits and all the like are rehearsed patterns or behaviors. And to think that you're just going to change it and it's just going to be light and day, it's going to be day and night the next day, that's a little bit naive. Some people can pull that off. Like it all built up for me. So when I went raw vegan, it was an easy transition, but there was a lot being built up to that point, right? I don't suggest most people try to just go cold turkey into a completely new dietary approach out the get-go, because a lot of people might have to sort out interpersonal stuff. But just to that point, to be successful in a dietary, you know, even that word is kind of funny because the word diet has die in it. I've been saying that for a long time. And that's part of the programming. It's not really, there's no diet. It's all about a lifestyle. It's about a live it, right? Does your belief system support this approach, right? And if not, then we need to figure out what is getting in the way so you can be successful at what you're trying to do. It's no different than starting a business. It's no different than being in a relationship, right? Everybody's going to have a different challenge along the way. And a lot of people don't give themselves enough time to run the experiment to see, you know, actual results. For me, the plant-based experiment was over 10 years, and I've gone through every iteration of it. And I've had many challenges, especially in the beginning, where most people would just completely abandon. And maybe that's the appropriate thing. But for me, it was a moment where I realized, okay, I'm on this raw vegan diet. I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm listening to a lot of people and I'm losing a lot of weight. I'm really into the philosophy. I know that this can work. That was the thing. I was like, I know that this can work. And eventually I kind of woke up out of my own blinders and realized, okay, I just got really skinny. I'm riding on adrenaline, basically. It's what it feels like. And either I abandon this or I use this as an opportunity to educate myself. And that was the moment I decided to become a professional nutritionist and actually become a student of this. And I realized, like, you know, one of the worst things you can do health-wise is be an uneducated vegan, right? Because what you're doing is and who knows what that is. That soy, is that wheat, is that processed food, is it organic, you know, plant-based foods, like whole foods? Like, what does that even mean? There's so many different things being thrown out there. So for me, I just realized that if I'm going to exclude an entire food group, animal foods, from the equation, which I'm genetically adapted to, most of us are throughout history, we have been adapted to that form of fuel. Obviously, I wasn't on organic grass-fed, grass-finished meat either. I was, you know, eating what most other people eat. So it was a necessary cleanse. But I had enough common sense to realize, like, okay, I need to get educated about how to do this, because if I just go haphazardly, then I might end up like some of those other horror stories that I've seen, that, you know, like from the fruitarian community or some of these other things that I've seen. I got those warning signs early on. Luckily for me, not everyone sees that. Not everyone gets that. I was not in the hype of it. I just wanted to understand the science, and I just wanted to understand, how do I thrive so I can help other people thrive? And that was very much a mental process more than just a physical process.
Yeah, I agree. Back in 2012, I went vegetarian, fairly similar. I've done the whole scale, if you like. Mm-hmm. I tried the fruitarian thing. I tried the breatharian thing. I tried the whole lot. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I come to a point where I met a few people and they were like, you know what? I did exactly what you did.
Yeah.
And then I started looking at the sun, and I started meditating with the sun. I've got fair hair, white skin. I shouldn't be eating bananas in the British winter time. And it was like, it just sort of clicked that maybe I wasn't doing, you know, I wasn't working with the surroundings that my ancestors have been brought up with, you know. But I think you raise an important point that it seemed for me anyway, and I did this in Southeast Asia as well, not necessarily in Britain. I was over there for a while, and that my consciousness level just went like that when I wasn't eating animal flesh. It was really, really quick. But once I've been able to, now I'm back home, it's been a few years, but I've been able to integrate that now, because I eat meat again now. I try and get it as good as possible. It's not great over here, but I try and do it as good as possible, the meat. But that I was sort of I was sort of skinny fat. It's a strange way to, you know.
Yep.
And now I've started eating flesh again. Like, I've dropped about 8 pounds, but my size has sort of gone up, and it's like, well, that's a bit better. Did you find that, or have you gone down a similar road?
Well, let me pause here. So in my experience, I only had one major experience like that. And that was the first year into this, right? So that was my total naive experimental year. And that was also the year where, you know, when you get into something like this, especially with the YouTube, when I got into it, I saw all these stories of people having these miraculous healings, which were completely legitimate. I've met many of these people. I've worked with many people over the years of and disease reversal. That absolutely is true. And that also brings up another point, which is there are short-term therapeutic diets, and then there are also long-term lifestyles, sustainable lifestyles. And we go through different phases and stages in our biology and our hormones. The psychophysical connection, just us as human beings, we're dynamic creatures. So there's always adjustments. There's always processes that we're going through, and they require different tools at different times. Right. So for me, when I think about, you know, it's like, I had a lot of people telling me that, hey, like, I'm a little concerned about you. You're getting a little skinny, this and that. And I kind of felt like I had found the answer. So I didn't listen to all that. However, I had enough sensibility, and as an athlete, you're so directly connected to your body. I was able to do a lot of the stuff I could do until I wasn't, until one day I was playing basketball. And I'm one of those athletes that just outperforms everyone from the perspective of endurance. Like, I can just go, go, go. My professional schedule used to be 3 workouts a day for 10 years straight. Wake up 4 in the morning. I go to sleep around 11 at night or 12 sometimes, because that was literally my schedule. And sometimes I'd be playing basketball all night long, or sparring in Taekwondo all night long, and just wake up and do it again. So I had that disposition about me. And what I realized about that was that that was not an indication of health. That was an indication of my psychology and my ability to push beyond physical limits. But I remember playing basketball one day and I got really lightheaded, and I had to step off. And that was the first time that kind of thing ever happened. And I was like, okay, wow, this whole, it was basically a high fruit, high vegetable kind of thing. That this is going to the market, getting pounds of fruits and vegetables, eating like 3 salads a day and smoothies and everything. That was before I got into what we call superfoods, or I got into herbalism. I got into protein, at the time, protein powders, but even understanding the role that protein plays. Because when you get into the vegan movement, one of the great things that people say is, oh, you don't need protein. I found out very quickly that that was absolutely not true. And not only was I not getting enough protein, I wasn't getting enough fat. And so what ended up happening was I started eating eggs to feel back into myself. And I went off that for a while, went back to veganism. But long story short, yes, to your question, yes, I did look in the mirror, and I started to develop those like exposed shoulders, the collarbone, my cheekbones were coming out more, I was more sucked in, and my arms were very skinny. And I've been doing push-ups and working out, and I was like, whoa, what is going on? So that I got concerned enough to actually, again, become a student of this. That was the fork in the road. But that was the only time in the 10 or 11 years that really happened. Because after that, I started applying the knowledge that I was learning from a lot of people, which is like, okay, like I actually run on a higher fat supply, a fat-based metabolism. I need to actually get into this idea of soaking and sprouting nuts, because there's the phytic acid and the enzyme inhibitor, so I don't want to disrupt my digestion. But I started playing around with all that, getting more nuts and seeds into my diet, hemp seeds, chia seeds. I started getting into superfoods, which are just more nutrient concentrated, like powders and things of that nature. I started loading up a lot more nutrient diversity, and I started to feel a lot better. I started to get my energy back, and I could go back to the gym and perform. And by the way, I was also spending a lot more time in nature. That was another side effect of this. I spent a lot more time in nature. I was grounded barefoot, and I also was under the sun quite a bit, which I do believe has a significant effect on the hormone cycle, and testosterone and these kind of things. So other than that, I was able to, I went through fluctuations, and some people would be like, yo, you're getting a little skinny. And then that was the time when I would like double down on working out and all that. But there was definitely a major ceiling that I hit. And once I really became, like, I'd say like 7 years into this, I feel like I felt so grounded in my knowledge. I'd spoken around the country. I'd gained the confidence in myself, where I felt like I really figured this thing out. I figured out how to thrive on a plant-based diet. And by that time, it was more of a vegetarian kind of middle path. Because the philosophy to me was very important. This idea of ahimsa, not doing harm to others. But I also realized that phrase is a dual phrase. It's do no harm to others, do no harm to yourself. And I realized if I was doing harm to myself, then I wasn't actually living up to what that actually meant, which is common, particularly in the modern day yogic circles that are vegetarian focused. They always say, oh, live by the ahimsa, do no harm to others. But that's not what it says. It says, do no harm to yourself, mind, emotion, how you think about yourself, how you feel about yourself, and how your body. Like, if you're cannibalizing your body in the name of animal welfare, that's a whole conversation in of itself that I'm now really publicly starting to elaborate my thoughts and perspectives on, so people can get out of this miasm and almost this anti-humanism kind of thing, where a lot of people actually don't like themselves and they don't love themselves. This is all about self-love at the end of the day. And for me, I realized, like, I'm not going to be good to anybody on the planet, certainly not to to the message I'm trying to convey, if I'm weeding away, if I'm wearing away, right? If I'm not feeling good, and I'm actually hurting my body by not giving it what it biologically needs, then I'm actually doing more harm to myself and I'm doing more harm to others. And there's also this component, if I'm not healthy and I'm talking about health, that's a little bit of a strange thing that's starting to happen. And I had moments like that. There are moments. And so I just went back into the laboratory and just went back into experimenting, researching, getting through digestive issues and whatever. But ultimately, I couldn't deny that I needed to readopt a conscious omnivore and at this point carnivore at the moment as a refeeding process to actually rebuild the animal body. And that's a whole thing in of itself, but you know, just to answer your question in a long-winded way, there was a moment like that, but I just want to make it clear to people listening, I didn't experience what a lot of people experience. What you're seeing on the internet now with a lot of these videos showing, like, a lot of these scary kind of horror stories of people that have, like, wrecked their health on vegan diets. I don't know what a lot of these people are doing. Most of these people are doing a completely reductionistic type of diet, and their body is kind of like that. You can see the musculature atrophying, the muscle wasting, and you see the disassociation between that person's self-awareness, where they're just like, no, they're promoting the message and they're not really aware on the camera. It's like, dude, you're really wasting away. It's actually very concerning. And if you want to stay on the plant-based diet, there's a way to do it. I know there is a way to do it where you can start to get some of your health back. But in many of our cases, as many of us find out, no matter how far we go, there's always a ceiling. And for me, I kept hitting the ceiling in my own potential. I was outperforming most people around me, whether they were vegan or not vegan. And that's just normal for me. That's not an indication of anything special. That's just who I am. But I knew within my own limitations, I wasn't making the gains. I wasn't able to move through. And by this time, I had done everything. I have gone through every nook and cranny, every supplement, everything. And I just was like, okay, like, now we've exhausted this toolbox. So now it's time to try something new.
Well, I think that's just self-love, isn't it? When you get to the point where you know you can be more and do more in the world.
Yeah.
If you want to use God as the term, you're doing a sort of disservice to God if you don't show up that way. And it's very,
I agree.
I was very difficult. I found that very difficult at the time, eating animals and everything, as you say. And I've got someone very close to me at the moment, and she struggles a little bit with autoimmune issues. And I haven't encouraged her to eat meat because, as you say, it's a mental thing rather than a physical thing. And would there be any advice that you'd give to anybody that has been down that path, similar to ourselves by the sound of it, that can make that shift?
Yeah. Well, you just really hit the nail on the head. It's a mental shift you have to make. The physical body is well prepared to make that shift. And I found that out very quickly. When I had my first steak in 10 years, my body lit up like a Christmas tree. And mind you, I wasn't necessarily wanting to happen. You know, although I wanted to go to the next level and I was ready for it, there was a part of me that knew that if this worked, like it has for so many other people and so many of my friends who were in the field and were public, and then they made the shift, I saw what happened to them. I saw how they got vilified. I saw all the anger and all the stuff that happened to them. So I was kind of like, ooh, okay, well, you know, I think I knew all the consequences, at least for me. Most people aren't that. Like I was a public figure. I've spoken around the world. I've written many books, and I really was championing this message, not in a dogmatic way, but in a very passionate way about this message. So, you know, there was a lot for me to factor in, but ultimately it was like, I got to run the experiment. I have to know what is the truth. So that's the first thing I would say. Your ability to sacrifice your belief systems on the altar of truth is really the spiritual path. And it's part of your karma, turning your karma into dharma. And the karma thing is interesting because to me, your karma is represented in your addictions. It's represented in the inability to shift from adolescence into adulthood, to shift from belief systems into, I like what your show is called, sovereignty, right? Being a sovereign human being, independent of belief systems and all that stuff. So I'd say for people, you know, wherever you're at on this kind of situation, understand, first of all, everything you're feeling is normal, and give your body the benefit of the doubt. Allow your body to be the guide. Your animal body needs to be fed, and everybody has to do this dance. If somebody like myself, I haven't, my philosophies haven't really changed. They've just adjusted. I've adjusted it to meet the demands of the moment in a new truth. So you don't, your philosophies don't have to change. Like you as a person don't have to change just because you're changing your dietary approach. And I think a lot of people, I know for me, that was a big process I had to work through. And I just want to encourage people to give themselves the freedom to explore and experiment so you can actually know what the truth is. It may not work for you. I accept that too. Like if you eat meat and it does not, you don't feel anything and it doesn't resonate with you, then I would be more happy with the vegan community if more people did that and went back to veganism versus just telling people all this epidemiological, so-called scientific nonsense that actually isn't really, it's not clinical or causal science. It's not really it's not anything provable. It's just this observation or pointing in a direction kind of thing. And so that whole community is going to try to point you in a particular direction, but I'm more interested in the person. If I'm going to take that advice, I want to talk to the person who had challenges, who experimented with eating animal products and found that it didn't work for them and they went back. That person to me is more of a credible source instead of someone that just went on the one end and now they have, you know, they're just fighting tooth and nail to defend this position, but they themselves do not know for sure if this is the optimal path. All they know is that I was eating processed food, standard American diet, got onto this, felt a lot better. And oh, hey, by the way, there's a whole community of people here that welcome me in with open arms. And the social aspect is such an important driver. I think the social aspect of veganism in particular, and you could say that by all these communities, but the vegan thing is more pronounced and more obvious in some of the cult-like nature. I think it's very, I know for me, I want to be popular when YouTube and everything. I know some of the most popular people now, I've watched their career, and I could have been one of those people, you know, and, you know, in terms of like the millions of followers and whatever, you know, that was possible, but I realized that, like, for me, this isn't a popularity contest. For me, this isn't like, it's not about that. Like, for me, this is actually about like leaving a legacy, you know, and being a professional. So anyways, those are just some of my thoughts. And I would really encourage people at this time in human history, This is not the time for belief systems or dogma. This is the time for knowing. It's not even the time for like learning. It's we got to know something. We have to know where we're going, what we're doing, and what's going to help us get there, particularly with the diet. Everybody needs to get on a fuel supply that's going to fuel them and empower them to actually do what they need to do.
That's very well put, beautifully put, yeah. I think when we get back in touch with our own nature and our own surroundings, our circadian rhythms, when we actually objectively look at what's going on around us, it's not actually as difficult as we think. When you mentioned earlier about like Big Pharma and the conspiracies that surround all that, the last thing that these people or whatever they are want is a healthy society, is a people who think for themselves and take sovereignty over themselves. That's the last thing that these people want. Yes. So the conspiracy thing you said is closely linked, and I agree with that. I think that might be with the consciousness shift that tends to happen. So what do you think is the major with Big Pharma in particular? Because obviously we're talking about health and well-being at the moment. What is the whole agenda behind all that? Because money doesn't seem to be it, because they can just print that on a whim. So what is it all about?
Yeah, well, it's definitely multi-layered from the bottom, the top down. And so there's multiple agendas. Ultimately, it's about power and control. And you said it very, very well. You know, if you're going to try to control somebody, you don't want them to be healthy of body and mind. One of the things my friend David Wolf said a long time ago is that you can fool anybody that only has four minerals in their diet: NPK, nitrogen, potassium, phosphorus, chemical fertilizer. And demineralization is really the root of the consciousness problem, in my opinion. When somebody is fully mineralized and they're nutrified, they have the amino acids, their digestion is working fine, the gut-brain connection is working optimally, then they're not going to be easily fooled or mind controlled or traumatized or whatever the thing is. They're not going to just buy into anything. They're not going to be very controllable, and they're going to be able to think for themselves, and they're going to have the wits about them and the internal strength to actually do whatever is necessary. And oftentimes it's going against the conventional meme and like so many people are now with the medical system itself. On one level, it is about money for the people that money is most important to. That would be, in this case, what we're seeing. So I'm going to drive an example that a lot of people are now becoming aware of with this whole coronavirus thing. Hospitals are obviously skewing the statistics. We know that for sure. The death certificates are being falsified. There is a financial incentive for hospitals to label everybody with corona or COVID-19 as the means of death. And it even says in the recommendations that are public record right now that the recommendations from the CDC to as the World Health Organization, they're both the same thing, basically. They're both completely corrupted at this point. It's not even a conspiracy to say that.
No.
It's in their records. You can find on social media or just look it up. Their recommendation for doctors in hospitals is if somebody either dies of COVID-19 or they are assumed to have it based on whatever testing, it's not even the test. There's people that believe that the testing testing methods is actually administering the so-called virus to people. That's a whole thing in of itself that, you know, that needs unpacking. But the point is there are financial incentives to hospitals for certain types of death certificates. And this isn't just COVID-19 or corona. I was listening to a doctor who happens to be a politician. He was breaking down how hospitals work. and how the whole death certificate works. And certain causations, if you label it a certain causation, is going to generate more money for the hospital than others. So even somebody might have one condition or one possible cause for death. They invert it, they switch it out, like, oh, this was something that was correlated, but this is the cause right here that we found. You see this with like cardiovascular conditions, cancers, all these different things. They all have a financial incentive associated with it. I'm not saying that that's necessarily, it's obviously a scam from the biggest level. And then on the lower level, you have these enforcers, whether they know it or not. I don't think most people do. I think they're just pawns on the chessboard like everyone else. Some people are like, oh, but it's the doctors. It's like, what do you mean the doctors? Do you understand that doctors go through the most traumatizing educational route to become a doctor? That person has no space to figure out who they are as a human being, from high school to college, and then graduate school, postgrad, whatever, like, in what their education is and the indoctrination, how difficult it is for someone to become a doctor. And we think like, oh, that's because, you know, they're getting the best education and they're becoming super competent. They're being competent in something. And I believe it's actually a form of trauma-based mind control, where you actually traumatize somebody through so much cerebral enforcement and just such a mental push on this education and testing, compulsory, rinse and repeat type of tests and stuff. You push them so much in that direction that they become easily controllable. And then you throw them in an environment, there's constant fires to put out. There's constantly things going on and I've worked in a hospital. I worked in a hospital in Oakland, California for 3 years, a little bit before my raw food kind of evolution process. That's actually what woke me up and got me out of there. Oh. I've seen what goes on in there. It's chaos. It's madness. And so do you think that people are critically thinking? Do you think that these individuals are like the best amongst us? One of the things that I share with people as an insight is that part of the way the system controls people is that they take the brightest minds amongst us and then they put them on all the wrong information, force it into them, and then send them out, right? So, you know, that's an interesting and probably a very good perspective for people to understand. Does that mean doctors and nurses are bad people? No. Not at all. Some I would say probably are, you know, the ones that become aware of this and are complicit in this and go along with this, you can't excuse that behavior. Right. But ultimately this isn't about them or us. It's just, that's a level of the chessboard. That's a level of the game. And they're just pawns like everybody else that happen to have that occupation. And then as you move up, it becomes less and less about money and more about control. But the paradox is that economic control is the means of control in our world overall. Yeah. If you can collapse the economy, you will instill pandemic and fear throughout the civilization, because that is people's means of survival. And for most people, money is the equivalent of existential threat, right? You know, just with the rise in suicide. And what causes most suicide? I don't know what causes most suicide, but I'd say on a surface level, it's definitely economically driven. We know that the number one reason for divorce and decoupling among spouses is usually financially related. So the way that economics play into our lives, it cannot be underestimated. And so that's what I see happening. That's the greatest threat of this whole situation, is actually the economic consequences that it's going to have, which also, for the listener listening to this, I also want to say, it also happens to open up the greatest opportunity economically for all of us, because where there's crisis, where there's challenge, is also the greatest opportunity. This will produce more millionaires and beyond than before, or people that weren't millionaires. There's going to be more and more of them coming up because the way that you create prosperity for yourself is that you create innovation, right? Through the mother of the mother of innovation is necessity. So now it's necessary to create new platforms, new educational platforms, just like podcasts, right? And some kind of like courses and programs and things that can actually help people navigate through the mirage and the charade and navigate onto, okay, what is the world we're moving into? We're not going back to whatever it was, and whatever it was, wasn't something we wanted to be in anyways. So we got to get out of this whole complaining thing. Cause that wasn't, we want to go back to that. No, we're in a transition turbulence. So the key is whoever can be stable and centered and certain and confident moving through the turbulence is going to be the people that actually prosper. And I think that the best way to do that is help bring other people along, just like you're doing. This is what I am committed to doing as well. And overthrowing the control system, not just the control system outside of us, because here's a perspective I try to give to people about this whole thing. It's all a chess game, right? And you have to identify where on the chessboard are you. I'm not on the front lines. I'm not involved in human trafficking. I'm not involved in the different components and the different aspects going on at those levels. I'm right where I'm at. So I have control of what I have control of, and my time and energy needs to be mostly focused on what I can control and what I can influence versus things that I can't, right? And that's very important. That's how we can create some change for ourselves and actually take control. And when I say take control, control of what's going on up here, right? This could go into a lot of different things, but the basic point is that we have to deal with our own, the boogeyman inside of us, right? Mm. Like all these politicians and stuff, it's all sock puppets of our own creation. Even these like I think of like when I look at Bill Gates, I'm like, I'm not saying he is, but he's probably the closest representative of the Antichrist from a biblical perspective. I started returning back to all that stuff. I was like, okay, this is really interesting. And the seven princes of darkness, you know, and the hell realm. And I was like looking at him like, okay, you got George Soros, you got Henry Kissinger, you got, whether they're even still alive or not, that's a whole thing in of itself. If they're just like holographic projections or whatever, I don't know. There's like just a lot of theories out there I've weeded through. But you have these different characters that all seem to represent a particular theme in the global chessboard. And so I realized these are all sock puppet projections as far as my reality is concerned, right? So I was like, okay, that helped me organize the madness into something more manageable. And so I was like, okay, well, what's going on inside of me though? Because on the individual level, you know, we all have light and dark inside of us. We all have shadows inside of us that are repressed, ancestral trauma, this life trauma, whatever it is. And this is really the opportunity to deal with our inner demons, deal with the inner hell realm, deal with the inner turmoil, the inner agitation or triggers that we have. Use this as an opportunity to evolve out of necessity, really. And that's how I feel about all that. There's a number of different things thrown up in there, but you know, you asked me like, what is this all about? I mean, honestly, I don't know other than the fact of what seems obvious. It's about, you know, part of it is population control for sure. We know that, but what's that about? That's about control. All of this is fear. That whole system is built on the pathology of fear and injecting people, whether with physical toxins or with fear toxins, the media, all of that stuff is just based on fear. So if somebody can understand that, they can defend themselves from the inoculation of fear and take control of their life.
Yeah, agreed. I think you've got Carl Jung's like collective unconscious.
Yeah.
That's just playing itself out on the screen. And if you can't become objective to that and just see the forest and not just the tree.
Right.
You're in a world of shit at the moment. I can see people like that they're operating with the fear goggles on. No one's going around each other's houses. You've got neighbors like calling the police on people having friends around. And it's just, it seems like people are so psychically and spiritually weak and bankrupt that they're like, they're so reliant on, like, as you mentioned earlier, Bruce Lee, the father figure, mommy and daddy to look after them, because maybe they haven't had that. We've had such a seemingly easy society for 70, 80 years since World War II. And there's no archetypes that people have got hold of, particularly in the generation. I'm 28. I think I'm classed as a millennial. So the generation before that and the generation before that possibly haven't had that archetype to work with. And it seems that that's playing out at the moment. That's what it seems like to me.
That's a very astute observation. Yes, I feel like it's an archetypal wound that people are trying to fill and they're trying to deal with. And it's this consistent psychic agitation that is going on, and they're trying to use the external as a way to remedy it. Because, I mean, you know, how can you blame them either? Because who told us about any of this stuff? Right? Who gave us the manual for living life? I was fortunate to at least have, you know, this iconography, this idea in different interviews and the movies of Bruce Lee to kind of build a model of masculinity, or build a model of something that I could use to move through the adolescent years, right? Until I could really like study alternative information and different things like that. And somehow it just clicked with me. It just clicked. I mean, it's not necessarily click with everybody, right? So everybody has a different thing that they're going through. And I think the archetypal perspective is absolutely critical. It's actually everything. So for example, if somebody is feeling a certain way, they feel nihilistic, they feel hopeless, they feel like there's an emptiness there. That emptiness is not going to get filled with food. It's not going to get filled with working out. It's not going to get filled with sex or relationships or these different things. Those things can all be very helpful and are part of a healthy lifestyle. However, they're not going to fill the centerpiece where the soul is. And meditation as well, and spiritual pursuits, these can all become rabbit holes and distractions that take us away from the central archetype. For me, my archetype is that of a warrior, right? So that's my core archetype. That's why that stuff clicks for me. For some people, they're going to be more like a wizard or a magician, right? They're going to be more into like, you know, some form of alchemy. I'm into that too, but I'm not as deeply steeped into it, or it's not as central to me as it is to someone else, right? But I also gleam these other things to create more of a well-rounded self. But I know who I am at the core of it, right? And I think that's what people need to discover about themselves. Who are they? Stop comparing themselves to other people on social media and trying to find certainty through you know, kind of false means. And I understand, because I've gone through this, I've done this, I've played that game. Social media makes it very convenient to do that kind of thing. But yeah, like studying archetypes and getting in touch with, like, the archetype of a hero, for example, like that's relative to all of us, right?
Yeah.
How to be a hero in your own life. What does the hero do? What is the hero's journey all about with Joseph Campbell, that whole archetypal cycle? What is that all about? And where am I in that journey? And what is my initiation, right? Like, whatever that agitation is inside of us, that is our initiation into the next phase of the journey. And yeah, I think that was just really spot on.
Yeah. Could I ask about the coronavirus?
Yes.
Over here, there's like, I don't know what it's like over there, but there's like conspiracy theories that like Donald Trump is like the savior of the world and stuff. Do you know what I mean? I'm not buying that at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he seems to be fighting the good fight, but you know, is defunding the WHO, things like that, the World Health Organization. Mm-hmm. What's it like over there with him? Is it very split?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of ideas and everything around. It depends on where you occupy most of your time and what kind of circles you run in. What I can say about that from my perspective and what I feel is true, or at least closer to a truth, people will project their stuff onto other people. It happens all the time. So Donald Trump really is this interesting archetype in of itself. He is, well, first of all, I don't think he is what most people think he is. That's the first thing. I think he is far more intelligent and far more consciously aware of what's going on. I think he actually has been, and you can see it, and this is way before his presidency, if you start going back into his history, he's kind of always been the same person. So I think that he plays with the media because he does truly believe that most media is totally fake news. Like, we know that now we can, it's becoming more and more obvious by the day. I think he actually generates power from it because it's part of an overall mission that he's on. So I do believe that he is a man on a mission. I believe that he's playing a part for the public. And he's purposely dumbing down, or at least appearing to dumb down things for many different reasons that are a little more complicated than the average person understands. You know, if you imagine being in that position, there's so many complexities and so many opposing forces going on that you have to just understand that he's riding some kind of thin line and doing, and yeah, definitely fighting the good fight. I don't think he's a savior. I think that's what people project onto him in the whole QAnon thing. My feeling is that I think that there is definitely some significant truth in all of that, but I don't necessarily buy into the narrative of the story. I don't know. Nobody does except the people that do. I do believe, based on the evidence of, like you said, defunding the WHO, merging the Federal Reserve with the Treasury, his cadence and his outspokenness with the media, everything about him is counter agenda. We've never seen that before. That's the just first thing people need to get a hold of. If they're like, oh, I don't like Donald Trump and all this stuff, it's like, look, just look at the actual evidence, look at the dominoes falling. And he's just one person who happens to have like rhinoceros skin and can take 1,000 poison darts at the same time. I think he's playing the exact role he's meant to play for those people, whomever they are in the secret military service and which I believe is actually somewhat proven. I mean, with everything going on, human trafficking and all the children that have been reported being saved and all the stuff that's being leaked, it's not an accident that this coronavirus came on, and then almost simultaneously you have the emergence of previously hidden information around pedophilic rings, the pedo criminals, and all, I mean, even though I was into some of this stuff, I didn't see all this everywhere I went. This was not like, you know, it was all about UFOs and aliens and secret space programs, and that was the whole thing, right? That was the cover-up. I wasn't seeing, most of us weren't seeing the actual cover-up that's going on, you know, underneath our nose. All of a sudden, this is all just flooding out there in the movie, out of shadows and all this stuff, just happens to be flooding at the same time. I don't think that that's a conspiracy theory. It's just flat out, it's more than coincidence. It's complete synchronicity. And I think it's the light and the dark coming together. And there's going to be this integration point, which I hope, I believe, is going to be disclosure. Whether it's UFOs or not, I don't know, and that's not really even of interest to me anymore. I definitely believe that that's all true for sure. And play some kind of part in terms of like hyperdimensional entities and energy harvesting and all that. Like, I absolutely, in satanic rituals, like, I know for a fact that that's all true. However, just on the ground floor, and as pertains to Donald Trump, I think that he is Yeah, I appreciate him. Let me say it that way. I just really appreciate him in a way that I couldn't before. And I think he and certain other people like Vladimir Putin are very clearly going against the co-opted agenda. And I think they're showing the absolute weaknesses in the control system, in the agenda. And I think that it's a very, very positive thing. And I would love for more people to kind of see what's actually going on versus their own tainted emotional reaction of it.
Yeah, and all they see, a lot of these people, to be fair, is just what's coming through the television screen, which has got its own frequency band being thrown at them all day long. Mm-hmm. And obviously the media is owned by similar people to the big pharma companies and the economic system. They're all intertwined. They're all interconnected, aren't
totally.
They?
Yeah,
that pyramid.
Absolutely.
So with this virus, do you actually think it is a virus, or do you think it's like a, do you think it's man-made? Do you think it's an organic thing? What are your opinions?
My feeling and what I believe to be true is that it's man-made for sure. I mean, it has a patent on it. Right.
Yeah.
So anything with a patent is man-made. Nothing innate. And this is the whole pharmaceutical thing. The whole pharmaceutical idea is to synthesize natural plant compounds and isolate them and create a patent on them. You can't patent ayahuasca. You can't patent an herb in nature. Right. So you have to be able to synthesize it and then own it. That's the whole thing. They want to create ownership. Right. So if a virus, just like Ebola or Zika or HIV, these all have patents on it. Therefore, they're unavoidably man-made, and just going through the research into it, I think there's ample evidence that it is the idea, let me say it this way, the idea behind this, the prevailing idea that I think is probably most accurate, is that this was an intended bioweapon that was either created in the Wuhan laboratory or was shipped over to the Wuhan laboratory. And either it was accidentally leaked or it was just forced out on purpose due to whatever circumstances. You know, I from that perspective and that idea, what appears to have happened is that the lethality of the virus at hand was a lot lower than was originally intended. Talking about the conspiratorial idea, that's speaking from the perspective of an idea. I'm not saying I know these puzzles and perspectives that I've organized. And the intended effect was not as strong, or it just is a straight up smokescreen, which I believe ultimately in the bigger scope of this is really the truth. I believe that really just a smokescreen. Is there a virus? Yes, there does appear to be a virus, but that's up for debate amongst different people. It does appear that there is a virus for sure, but what I know for sure is we're not the right information. And the big question that people have is, do people die of COVID-19 or do they die with it? And that's before with that certificate thing. But yeah, I'll kind of pause on that because I think it answers your question.
Yeah. It's I think the internet's running riot at the moment. Let's start wrapping this up, buddy.
Yes.
What advice would you give to people today in the world that we're living in with everything going on? What advice would you give to people?
It's not dissimilar to what we talked about before, which is you really to be able to see clearly, and they need to empower themselves through all means of. So in your mouth, taking complete control and sovereignty over your physical health is everything. This whole thing is an onslaught on to the public health perception, people's health, and people's economic health. You have to be able to empower yourself in both areas radically right now. So when it comes to physical health, talked about that, you know, dietary approaches, is veganism an appropriate diet right now for people? Definitely not. And they also, not just for physical health, but also to ignite the warrior spirit. Like people, I think if people are really wanting to get up and get going and do something and think clearly and see through the falsehood, you got to take the vegan goggles off. Because I know for me, when I had the vegan goggles on, and when most people do, they become complicit and complacent to things in reality that would require more of that warrior type of assertion, that warrior type of clarity. People can easily dig their head in the sand kind of thing. Not everybody, but oftentimes.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the benefits of the animal foods in particular, and also minimizing the plant foods and the phytoalexins, which are the plant toxins that are built into the plant foods. If you have too much of that accumulate in the body, it's going to affect the gut-brain connection, and it's going to create some kind of fogginess and inflammation and not allow somebody to be fully grounded and to be able to think clearly, right? So I could easily say, oh, well, people need to think clearly, but how do you do that, right? Everybody wants to think clearly. Well, you do have to go through some kind of adjustment in your personal diet if you can't think clearly. And if you have these endotoxins building up in your body and they're clogging up your thought process, you have to get on the right dietary approach that's going to be right for you. And then the other part is the economic part. I really want people to take more responsibility for their economic freedom. And for a lot of people, that means getting entrepreneurial. Right. That means like start like getting going with, you know, some kind of home-based business. Right. I have a number of those, like doubling down on projects, doubling down on your own creativity, on your own focus. So you're not spending as much time on the media projection machine, but you're actually just focusing on what's important to you. I think this whole, it's very basic. You know, stay informed, stay woke, but at the same time, don't get so inundated in this theory or this thing or that thing. You got to know where on the chest and what is my immediate environment? What are my requirements? What do I need to stay above water? What do I need to thrive? Use a lot of the conspiratorial things as entertainment and education when you have time for it. But don't make it an obsession, because ultimately, again, it doesn't necessarily have a direct effect on your personal life unless it actually creates a lot of fear, creates paranoia or confusion, then it does have an effect. So those are my feelings and thoughts around that.
That's very well put, mate. Yeah. Ronnie, thanks a lot for coming on. I appreciate your time, buddy. You're sort of a catch to get on here. So thanks a lot for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Yeah, it's been great.
Cheers, buddy. All the best.
All right, brother.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.